city. Flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me. Too many people on
the... Hello, everybody, from the nightclub at the end of the world. It's Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. Back with you, seemingly miraculously, one more time on the 19th of January in the year 2014. Carolyn Baker is standing by, and I'm going to be exceptionally grateful just to be in her company and companionship and consciousness tonight as we talk about some heavy stuff. Last week's show with Paul Beckwith was a watershed moment, and if you have not listened to it, I encourage you to go to the archives and catch some major chunks in there. I was literally knocked on my butt by the show. During the course of the interview, Paul Beckwith is a part-time professor, climate scientist, very accomplished climate scientist, who has been helping us to translate what we know about global warming and climate collapse into tangible experiences, or he's been a bridge stepping in to help us make some sense out of it all. And it was an amazing show. I presented Paul Beckwith for what he is, because he is a unique item out there. We obviously did not agree on several things like geoengineering and so forth. That does not in any way take away from his good heart and the aggressive, and that's what I like about him, the aggressive, fearless, outspoken work that he's doing on the weather. But he said two things that were deeply profound and deeply troubling, because he knows what he's talking about. He's at the University of Ottawa. And he said number one, that we can expect that severe weather events, whether they be 130 degrees in Australia with brush fires all over the place, a large chunk of North America freezing its ass off, Great Britain getting flooded, and what is now clearly an historic, and you know, the word biblical has been killed now, drought in the state of California, which has horrendous implications. He said that we can expect those kinds of weather events to increase by orders of magnitude, both in frequency and in intensity. And I asked him to repeat that, and he did, without equivocation. And damn it, I respect people who know what they believe in and who say it, and who are so. That was number one. But then number two, he apparently, well, I would say almost prophetically, given the stories that have broken in the last week, said that what the world needed was a bitch slap, where we have a climate event where 10,000 or 100,000 people drop dead in a few days. Maybe that will get somebody's attention while people are paying $650 a ticket for a Broncos game in Denver. Maybe that's what it will take. And he was so absolutely right. But what has become clear, I think, as I watched and interacted with people on Facebook, and through other means, directly with people in Northern California, that people are now saying, hey, this is not just fun to talk about on Facebook. We need a break here. This is starting to get hard. Well, yes, it is. And I can tell you it's hard here in the San Luis Valley in Colorado. I will move out of the house here with Doug sometime in the spring, because I can't do another winter like this if it comes to that. But that's down the road, and things will work out as they should. Of course, we might wind up with palm trees here, but who knows? Things are tough. So in the meantime, during the course of this, of all the stuff that's been unfolding, and Paul's comments rocked me all week, and I've been researching the California drought, I was struck by a story from the Daily Mail in Britain with an amazing photograph. The air quality in Beijing is so bad, and also in Shanghai, and also all along the China coast, Chinese coast, that they have high-definition electronic billboards 100 meters across, maybe 20 meters tall, where people can watch the sunrise in living color because the air quality is so bad they can't see the sunrise. That is so poetic and so deep. And so deeply, deeply troubling about the disconnection in the human soul, the many disconnections which are getting bigger and bigger, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so glad Carolyn's here tonight. Paul Beckwith wrote this week, this was posted a couple of days ago, Our New Climate and Weather. The familiar global weather patterns that we, our parents and our grandparents and most of our distant ancestors, at least as far back as the last ice age remnants, have always experienced are no more. We have entered an abrupt climate change phase in which an energized water-primed atmosphere and disrupted circulation patterns give rise to unfamiliar, massive, and powerfully destructive storms, torrential rains, widespread heat waves and droughts, and less commonly, but occasionally, widespread cold spells. Why is this happening now? Sophisticated Earth System Computer Models, ESMs, summaries of state-of-the-art peer-reviewed climate science from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and mainstream science have generally put the climate change threat out to the latter part of the century. Global data from all parts of the world, most noticeably the Arctic, shows that reality is quite different from these models in mainstream thinking. Just by looking out the window, much of humanity now senses that something is very different and uncomfortably wrong in their particular region. Depending upon location, vegetation is drying out and burning or being toppled by very high wind events, or oceans are invading upon coastlines, or rivers are overrunning banks or drying up, or both. While rainfall deluges are inundating other regions. In fact, some regions are vacillating between massive floods and massive droughts, or record high temperatures and record low temperatures, even on a weekly basis. As crazy as things are now, listen to this, my family. As crazy as things are now, clearly they are not bad enough to wake up the general population enough to vote down, deny our politicians, and demand extensive governmental action on the problem. Not to worry. That action is a sure bet in the near future. The only question is, will it happen next year or in 3 years? In the meantime, many of us are doing as much as we can to educate people on the dangers we face and speed up the understanding of climate reality process. As much as we do, ultimately, it is the hammer of extreme weather causing, for example, global crop failures or taking out a few more cities and rich countries that will take the final credit for an abrupt tipping point in human behavior. Great line. The key to the disruption of the climate system is the Arctic. Human emissions have inexorably increased levels of CO2 and methane in the atmosphere sufficiently to cause an incremental overall increase of global mean temperature by 0.8 degrees centigrade over the last century. Over the last three decades, the greenhouse gases have caused sufficient warming in the Arctic to melt enough land-covered snow and ocean-covered ice such that the highly reflective surfaces have been replaced by dark underlying land and ocean, greatly increasing sunlight absorption, causing Arctic temperature amplification of 3 to 5 times and higher. I'm going to cut to the chase on this because I want to get to Carolyn. I really need to have her present here tonight. He talks about the jet stream. So how does the North American freeze of January 2014 and the upcoming late January 2014, upcoming late January 2014 freeze? There's another one coming. Everybody get that. Late January starts next week. Fit into this picture. In our familiar climate, the polar jet stream flowed mostly west-east with small north-south deviation or waves with typically 4 to 7 crests, separating cold, dry Arctic air from lower latitude, warmer, moist air. The latitude of the jet moves southward in our winter and northward in our summer. In our present climate, the jet stream waviness has greatly increased, and eastward average speed has decreased. Not only that, but in early January, there were only 2 troughs over North and Central Asia, North America and Central Asia, and 2 crests over Europe and the Pacific up through Alaska and the Bering Strait. The troughs had temperatures 20 degrees cooler than normal centigrade, while the crests had temperatures 20 degrees centigrade warmer than normal. These large waves and slowing of the jet stream is directly responsible for the changes we have been experiencing in weather extremes, cold, warm, depending upon your location. He says, now it's time for a beer. Okay, so on top of that, there are new record levels of radiation at Fukushima. Yeti News has published a very disturbing story showing that a great many teenagers are dying of leukemia. Although the numbers are secret and trying to be hidden, they cannot be hidden. We are still adding 250,000 people a day to the human population, while 200 species a day go extinct. None of the fundamental issues have been addressed in a way significant enough for me to comment on them. But it does appear that we have entered a new level of intensity, and that's why I'm so glad to have my dear friend Carolyn Baker back with us tonight. She is a finder at carolynbaker.net, speaking truth to power. She's the only person who's ever sat in for me as a co-host here. You all know her. You all love her. She's busy like a maniac. She's an author. She's a lecturer. She was a professor. She was a psychoanalyst, and she's like becoming everybody's best friend, and she's really prolific. I haven't even finished the book that just came out because it takes a while to get through it because it's, you know, based on calendar. But she's got another book coming. I can't keep up with this woman. Carolyn Baker, welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour.
Hey, Mike. It's good to be back here in Boulder, Colorado, where it was 65 degrees today. I took my dog to the park, and then I sat in the park for a while and read a book as if it were July. A woman came along and said, when's the last time you were able to do this in January? Isn't it wonderful? And I just sort of smiled and thought, not so much. But anyway, you guys are freezing down there, and it's pretty warm up here.
Well, if I had a car that would get there, I'd come up to see you.
Well, hey, I'll try to send you some of the warmth.
That's a good idea. I did manage to get to hot springs today. Okay, so you've heard my comments, and we have communicated throughout the week. And I think
you
pretty much grok real clearly what I'm saying. As a matter of fact, you have a brand new article, which I found to be, man, you just went straight for the heart. You didn't hold anything back.
Thank you.
Embarking on the journey of consciousness, staying on the train, which is up on my Facebook site. It's up on your site. It was published on the 13th. That's this week. But, man, that's ballsy. Essentially, what I said, and I'm going to ask you to talk about it, was, hey, look, guys, we have put the cards on the table that this is the situation that we are facing as a species, as a planet, you know, as a living ecosystem. If you're on this train now, I think essentially what you were saying was it ain't easy to get off, but it's also hard to stay on the train.
Yeah, and, you know, every day I work with people in life coaching who call me for various reasons having to do with collapse and near-term extinction. And one of the things that I like to do is just kind of have them briefly tell me their story. How did you wake up to all of this? How did you get involved in all of this? And, of course, every story is different and very, very interesting. And, you know, as I listen to these stories and I think of my own story over the years and how I got involved, it was like, you know, I got this image of, you know, you get on a train and first you learn about peak oil and it's like, oh my God. And then you learn about, you know, you learn about economic collapse and then you learn about climate change and then you learn about Fukushima and you want to get off the train, except when you come to things like near-term extinction and Fukushima, there's nowhere to get off.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so what you really understand eventually is, well, gee, I started on this journey as a journey of information for my intellect and, you know, for the well-being of my family. And then you realize you're on a spiritual journey, whether you want to call it that or not, no matter how you feel about the word spiritual, you're on a spiritual journey because this is a journey about who you are, why you're here, and what you came here to do.
Mm-hmm.
End of story.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can, if you want, put a lot of energy into preparing yourself through beans and bullets and storing water. And storing water is a great thing to do these
days.
It's
almost laughable now to hear.
But it's almost laughable, yeah. Yeah.
You know? Okay, so this is definitely getting harder, right?
Definitely getting harder. Very difficult.
All right. Because I've shared with you, we had part one of this what looks to be a really cool series from Vice, director Andy Capper, called Apocalypse, Comma Man, that showed up on the net this week. Part two will air next Tuesday, and for four Tuesdays after that, six parts. And it's going to turn up, I guess, throughout their series on HBO. Anyway, you'll find it, Apocalypse, Comma Man. I was impressed, and I was grateful. I talked to you this week about a place I was in, and I want to share that place with you, and I want to share that place with everybody who's here right now, because I've just been listening to some amazing Jungian stuff. I just sent you a link, even
I got it
before the show, which really talk about the facing of the ultimate evil shadow and our hatred of our bodies and our hatred of Mother Earth, which is and we can go into that. But I called you this week after our long walk. I mean, you and I have walked a long distance together.
Yes.
And the song that I picked tonight, by the way, is dedicated to you. So,
great.
And I said I had this feeling of being utterly and completely spent. And not like any I've ever had, even through all the challenges in my life. But when I saw that part one of Vice and I know the other five are coming, I go, it's like, well, there's not much left this old buffalo has to offer, you know? And it was a spiritual place rather than one to be all emotionally concerned about, because I was relating to what we know in the spirit world and in Native American spirituality is that in the web of life, the buffalo and the wolves know that they are related and they cooperate, and they cooperate even to the extent of dying. An old buffalo will lay down and spirit will communicate to the wolves where he is because he knows it's his time. That seems to be so lacking. And here I feel almost like, for, you know, the first time in a long time, I'm almost babbling. Tell me what the heck I'm talking about.
Well, I mean, you said it, that spirit communicates through that animal to the other animals, that the buffalo offers himself, herself as a sacrifice. And, you know, there's a lot of sacrifice that we're going to be called on to make right now, and that we are already being called on to make. This path that we're being forced to walk is one of making choices and often sacrificing things that we don't really want to sacrifice, but they are for our own good and the greater good of the planet.
The greater good of the planet.
Mm. Well, you know, it's we have spent most of our lives disregarding the planet.
As if we hated it, even as though we hated our own physical bodies, which age and get disease.
Exactly. Okay. And you know, going to Charles Eisenstein's work, it's all about falling back in love with the earth. I mean, the new book that you mentioned that's coming out probably in 2015 is called Love in the Last Emergency.
Oh, you are an optimist.
I know. The relationships we need to thrive, and if that book is able to come out and we're still all here, it has to do with all kinds of relationships, our relationships with the earth, our relationships with matter, our relationships with our bodies, our work, everything. Everything is a relationship. Life is a relationship. And so that's what we're dealing with right now. And to fall back in love with the earth is really part of what we need to be doing in these last hours on it.
Beautiful. What about making amends? I think
absolutely.
At this point, of course, it is impossible to amend as in fix, as in rectify, all the damage that's been done. That's why we're having these conversations, and that's why so many more people every week are listening to and paying attention to people like us. But isn't the intent and a small step of action critically important? We know that. I know that from so many years of 12-step, but the intent and even a small step is responded to.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we should be making amends all over the place, even if we're not heard, even if there are some people who, you know, they've written us off and they don't want to have anything to do with us and we've maybe screwed up our relationship with them, you know, that as best we can, we make amends to them. And even if they don't want to hear it, that we write them a letter we're not going to send, because we're doing this for us as well as for the other person, and go out into nature and make amends to nature like crazy. Whenever I speak to groups of younger people, I start out with an apology. You know, I'm part of the boomer generation that is partly responsible for the hell that we've left you, and I really want to apologize for that. I'm not the only person involved, but I have a part, and I want to say I'm sorry.
That's so hard for so many people, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I think it's time for a song. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea.
You picked the song tonight. What was the song you picked? Tell us about it.
I picked Leonard Cohen, Everybody Knows, and it's going to be the theme song for a webinar that I'm going to be teaching, which I'd like to talk about when we get a chance.
We'll do that at the bottom of the hour. Let's hear Leonard Cohen. He's probably going to fix things up right away here.
That's right.
Let's go.
Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows you really do. Everybody knows you've been faithful, give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Now or never. Everybody knows it's me or you. Everybody knows that you'll live forever when you've done a little line or two. Everybody knows that you're rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman just to shine an artifact of the past. Everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's going to be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. Everybody knows you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through, from the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach at Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming apart. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows, and everybody knows.
A good call, Carolyn. That was a good song. Well, let's see how I do right after we get down to the break. Okay, this is going to be, we've got 4 minutes till I got to do an ID and a couple things. Tell us about where this song is going to be a theme song for and what you're going to be doing. Make that announcement. Get it out.
Okay. Because of where we are and what we're doing and what we're having to face, I'm doing a 5-part webinar, Befriending the Dark Emotions, Healing in Turbulent Times. It starts February 6th. It's a live interactive video course. The first session is free, and it's going to be with my special guest and friend, Andrew Harvey. And we're going to be focusing on the big 5 emotions of collapsed NTE, fear, anger, grief, despair, and, drumroll, joy in relation to everything that's going on around us and within us.
That's cool. Now, how do people find out about it?
Okay, you can do 2 things. You can go to my website, carolynbaker.net. Right in the middle of the page is where you click for this course. Or you can go to my Facebook page. And it's all over my Facebook page, and it will continue to be. We'll have more details about it on the website in the coming days. But
where and when again? Give me the dates.
Okay. Starts February 6th, and it will be 5 Tuesday nights. Sessions are about 90 minutes each, and what's cool about this is that people can dialogue with each other, they can ask me questions, there'll be a little bit of homework, and I think it's going to be a very rich,
okay,
deep,
is this online
satisfied.
Or is this in Boulder?
This is online.
Ah!
Online, all over the
how
world.
How cool.
Yeah.
You are just too prolific, girl. You're supposed to be slowing down. What's going on with you? What's wrong? Here?
There's just too damn much going on to be slowing down. Are you kidding me?
You keep writing books and doing all this stuff. Well, that's good. It's like I'm so glad you're there. All right, we're down at the bottom of the hour. Let's take care of a couple of items of business here before we do a break. First of all, Carolyn, we've already talked about this, so we'll do a little fake TV, thing here. Could you possibly take the show for me next week?
I would be happy to take the show for you next week, but I'm a little jealous of why you're going away.
Well, I've been invited to, and I'm going to get a ride so I can actually get out of the state, to a Uipi ceremony, which is a Native American beautiful healing ceremony. Doesn't involve any drugs, but, man, things happen, and it is more consistent proof, and I've been to one before, and I love them. That the membrane, as Terence McKenna might say, is getting thin, and that we are nearing a point of evolution or alchemy. Well, we could talk about that. where things will be transformed. And I'm going down there to participate in it because I need some healing and I also just need to connect with spirit. I'm going to take a week off. I got to ride to Albuquerque. So Carolyn has it for next week. I got some fundraising thank yous and I'm going to do that, and then we're going to take a break and come back, and I'm going to get to play this wonderful song that I have dedicated to Carolyn Baker, but I'm going to tease her with that. I do what I do for free. You guys all know that. And I want to thank you. So it's been coming in. I am not hungry. I am in no immediate danger. But if you want, you can write to me February 3rd. That's my birthday. that was Freudian. You can write to me, Mike Rupert and Rags, at 27378 Red Cloud, two words, Avenue, Red Cloud Avenue in Moffett, Colorado, 81143. Or contact me on Facebook and PayPal. And just thanks to everybody. And special thank yous tonight to Stephanie Murray, Tom and Yvonne. It's either Fugate or Fugate. I don't know. I've only seen it online. I'm going to say Fugate just because I want to be Italian. To Tom and Whip McGinn in South Korea. What a beautiful letter you wrote me, Tom, and to my dear sister, Shante Pierce. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, here on the Lifeboat Hour at PRN.FM. We're going to be right back after these messages. Let the fear turn my ears and eyes off. That song that took us into and out of station break is It Would Be Strange from a band I'm part of, New White Trash. That was from our first album, Double Wide. You can find it at newwhitetrash.com. Love that song. Don't Let the Fear Turn My Ears and Eyes Off. Didn't write that line myself. Doug Lewis wrote it, and it's one of the best and most appropriate lines. We've had a few. We're back live with Carolyn Baker. I know many of you have questions tonight, and I've been saying we are going to take calls. The number is 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888. We're eager to hear from you and have you share with us from wherever you are in the world. Before we get to that, I'm going to do two things real quickly. I'm going to play my song for Carolyn. But before we get to that, there was a kind of a ridiculous two-dimensional, not even three-dimensional chart that was put out this week about doomers. And I don't even know the guy who did it, Albert Bates. And it was the quintessential attempt at reductionist, stupid, three-dimensional Cartesian logic. I don't know if you saw that, Carolyn. You weren't even on there. Did you see that?
I did see it, and I did make some comments about it on Facebook. I would have to agree with you that it was extremely one-dimensional, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Why would I be on there? Because it had nothing to do with emotions and spirituality, so I wouldn't be on there. but no, I mean, it's the same old kind of thinking that has gotten us where we are. And, I just had a big yawn. That was my response.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you know, somebody sent it to me as if I should be impressed, or you know, with somebody's old paradigm thinking, and you know, I just almost gagged. I said, "That's why we're in the place we're in, for
right.
You know, human beings trying to take a great, big, huge, enormous, full, multidimensional spiritual universe and put it into a one-dimensional chart."
Right.
That's what's wrong. So anyway, okay, good. I'm glad we got that. All right. 1-888-874-4888 for Carolyn Baker. Now, Carolyn, I'm going to set you up for this song that I'm dedicating to you.
Okay.
You know, and as I thought about it, I could also possibly just as easily dedicate this to Guy McPherson, or maybe all three of us. But if I give the title of the song, that'll give it away. It won't be a surprise, but I'll give you a hint. The band is called Steeler's Wheel, and you may not know, but this is a song that I dedicate to Carolyn Baker, my old friend who I've walked a long way with. Here's for you, Carolyn.
Thank you.
Don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling.
Just for you.
Thank you so much. But you know what? The middle is not a good place to be. And if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space.
Well, that's true. Okay. Well, we're stuck between something and something, but we're still on the edge.
That's right. That's right. Thank you.
We can figure that out. That was Jerry Rafferty in Steeler's Wheel, Stuck in the Middle with You. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Yes. Yeah. Boy, ain't that
indeed.
True. You know, it's there are no callers, which is good. Because what that tells me, and I've been doing this a long time, and actually our listener numbers are going up now. They have during the course of the show, which means that what they want is for the elders to talk.
Yeah.
So I want to do this. It's we got plenty of time. My Facebook friend Keith Johnson posted a poem, and you are deeply into poetry.
Yes, I am.
On my Facebook page a couple days ago, and I didn't get to it until the next day, and then I shared it. And it really struck a chord around the world. I mean, we're talking, you know, many, 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 many likes and many, many comments and many. I'd like to read this poem, and then for the rest of the show after that, you can take us wherever you want to go, because you're going to be doing the show next week, so you can start to warm them up for whatever, wherever you're going to go then. The poem is called Sometimes a Wild God by Tom Hirons or Hirons. I don't know how to pronounce his name. H-I-R-O-N-S. Sometimes a wild god comes to the table. He is awkward and does not always know the ways of porcelain, of fork, and mustard, and silver. His voice makes vinegar from wine. When the wild god arrives at the door, you will probably fear him. He reminds you of something dark that you might have dreamt, or the secret you do not wish to be shared. He will not ring the doorbell. Instead, he scrapes with his fingers, leaving blood on the paintwork, though primroses grow in circles around his feet. You do not want to let him in. You are very busy. It is late or early, and besides, you cannot look at him straight because he makes you want to cry. The dog barks. The wild god smiles. holds out his hand. The dog licks his wounds and leads him inside. The wild god stands in your kitchen. Ivy is taking over your sideboard. Mistletoe has moved into the lampshades, and wrens have begun to sing an old song in the mouth of your kettle. "I haven't much," you say, and give him the worst of your food. He sits at the table bleeding. He coughs up foxes. There are otters in his eyes. When your wife calls down, you close the door and tell her it's fine. You will not let her see the strange guest at your table. The wild god asks for whiskey, and you pour a glass for him, then a glass for yourself. Three snakes are beginning to nest in your voice box. You cough. Oh, limitless space, oh, eternal mastery, oh, endless cycle of death and birth, oh, miracle of life, oh, the wondrous dance of it all. You cough again, expectorate the snakes, and water down the whiskey, wondering how you got so old and where your passion went. The wild god reaches into a bag made of moles and nightingale skin. He pulls out a two-reeded pipe, raises an eyebrow, and all the birds begin to sing. The fox leaps into your eyes. Otters rush from the darkness. The snakes pour through your body. Your dog howls, and upstairs your wife both exults and weeps at once. The wild god dances with your dog. You dance with the sparrows. A white stag pulls up a stool and bellows hymns to enchantments. A pelican leaps from chair to chair. In the distance, warriors pour from their tombs. Ancient gold grows like grass in the fields. Everyone dreams the words, too long forgotten songs. The hills echo and the gray stones ring with laughter and madness and pain. In the middle of the dance, the house takes off from the ground. Clouds climb through the windows. Lightning pounds its fists on the table. The moon leans in through the window. The wild god points to your side. You are bleeding heavily. You have been bleeding for a long time, possibly since you were born. There is a bear in the wound. "Why did you leave me to die?" asks the wild god. And you say, "I was busy surviving. The shops were all closed. I didn't know how. I'm sorry." Listen to them, the fox in your neck and the snakes in your arm and the wren and the sparrow and the deer, the great unnameable beasts in your liver, your kidneys, and your heart. There is a symphony of howling, a cacophony of dissent. The wild god nods his head, and you wake on the floor holding a knife, a bottle, and a handful of black fur. Your dog is asleep on the table. Your wife is stirring far above. Your cheeks are wet with tears. Your mouth aches from laughter or shouting. A black bear is sitting by the fire. Sometimes a wild god comes to the table. He is awkward and does not know the ways of porcelain, of fork, and mustard, and silver. His voice makes vinegar from wine and brings the dead to life. That poem, Carolyn, has struck a chord. So we got like 15 minutes left. Where do you want to go?
Well, tell me about the chord it struck in you.
I understand very clearly from my own long walk that almost all of the work I have ever had to do was inside. I found that out the hard way.
Yeah.
But that's the spiritual path. And this was all about shadows, but there was something beautiful and wild about the interaction between the wounded wild god, who didn't mean harm, who was merely, I guess, just the shadow of the man who greeted him and let him into the house. I find it very moving, and so did many other people, because it acknowledges deep, deep, painful struggle, but it also shows great compassion for the wounding that we ourselves carry and experience. It shows enormous compassion and recognition of the connectedness and the need for integration. I guess that's what I would take from that.
It really does. And, it also, what also grabs me is it really appeals to the animal in all of us, you know, and kind of brings us back to that place of we're just another species,
mm-hmm.
You know. We are one of the mix. And and it also kind of reminds me of something I heard this week, and I can't remember the source of it, but, you know, the statement was very simple. The sacred comes to us in the disguise of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so the secret is
That's good. Is
always in whatever it is, you know, even this horrifying situation that we're in the world, on the planet, in our personal lives, whatever, the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, the sacred is there. It's brought that to us. It's present in whatever we're dealing with.
And so why then, and here I'm hearing this enormous harmonic resonance because these two things have turned up between that email that I sent you earlier tonight,
mm-hmm.
about the deep, bloody, violent, vicious Jungian shadows.
Right.
And this, and what, how would we describe what it is we have been cut off from? All this time.
We've been cut off from our sacred self and the part of us that resonates with all of creation. We've been cut off from that. We've been made separate. It's that Cartesian stuff. It's the Enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you're over here and everything else is over there, and you have to objectify everything else and objectify yourself and objectify your own body, you know, rather than have a relationship with yourself and the rest of the planet. It's completely different, and that's, I think, the core of our wounding.
Now, it's very clear, and this is not strange to almost anybody who has walked a spiritual path for some distance, a sincere one, is that we know that there is a dying to self to that is necessary to awaken to what Francis of Assisi would call eternal life, but, you know, we know what it is, the other side, the unity. What I'm sensing, and what's very clear, I go back to the Terence McKenna line. We might want to weave him in here, too, about a fire in a madhouse. And what I've heard, especially through your newest essay, which I loved, I just thought it was so ballsy, we have staked out ground now that we really can't leave, like ground on a vision quest,
mm-hmm.
you know, people like you and me, in that, I made a very clear decision, you know, some weeks ago, which has been very well received on Facebook and publicly, to change everything that I was doing, because if it didn't talk about the ultimate, the real quintessential shit, I'm not going to waste my time. We know that we're dying and that death is upon us. How big or how small is that circle for us, and does it empower us or does it limit us?
Well,
that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a very tough one. It's kind of like that picket pin place, you know, that Derek Jensen talks about, where you stick in your picket pin in the earth and you say, I'm not leaving this place.
Right.
But there's also a sense of we need to be flexible in the moment. We need to be open to where the sacred might want us to expand or mm-hmm. where it might want us to contract,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that ground isn't our ground.
So this remains for us, then, a dance.
Yes, always.
That's getting, like, ever more intense. I was so struck this week, and maybe you've been doing, I think, a lot of work with personal coaching, and you can talk about that and how you do that. I think you've been busy. I know I have been interacting heavily. But I'm hearing a lot of people saying, hey, man, this is really starting to hurt, which is something new for me. Are you picking that up?
Well, I am picking that up, and I'm also picking up, this is hurting, and I feel so alive, and I don't know exactly what to do with my life now. You know, I need to reinvent myself somehow and find out what my gifts are, and, you know, and can you help me with that? And then there's always the relationship issues of, you know, I can't talk to my kids, I can't talk to my wife, I can't talk to my partner, blah, blah, blah. And so there's both. But, you know, one of the reasons I chose Leonard Cohen is because, damn it, everybody does know.
Everybody
knows. That's the problem. That's why people are going so nuts, is because they know.
Well, I looked this week, and I was deeply moved. I looked deeply into the California drought. And Paul Beckwith nailed that right on the head.
Right.
It is an absolutely historic, It is the dry, 2013 was the driest year since they started keeping records in California, which is sometime in the early 1820s, I think, when the Mexicans, Spanish were doing it. The driest year, but there was a photo essay put up, which is on my Facebook page. I forget who published it, but it was respectable. Amazing photo essay. High school students in a town called Bishop, which is one of my favorite places in California.
Yeah, it's in a great little town.
Bishop and the Lone Pine. I love all that on the eastern slope where Mount Whitney is. And that's the source of most of California's water. But these high-altitude balloon pictures show that the Sierra Nevadas are bereft of snow.
Right.
And Doug Lewis just recently drove through the San Joaquin Valley on Interstate 5. He said it's a devastated desert wasteland. It used to be so green and abundant. Now, what Paul Beckwith said was that, you know, a collapse in food production in California will result in starvation. He's absolutely right. I discussed that.
Yes.
Confronting collapse. But the state is in dire straits. And what I commented on a Facebook thing is, like, it's going to happen sooner or later this year. I mean, the 35 degree centigrade wet bulb temperatures, which cannot be survived, which is a combination of heat and humidity. Figure 104 degrees and 98% humidity, and people die. It's just not possible to live beyond that. Our certainty for much of Southeast Asia and China this year, certainly parts of the U.S., it looks to be very ugly, less humidity in the desert states. But it's no leap, and looking at the way things have gone, we know that there's going to come a time in the year 2014 when 10,000, 100,000 people die all at once. And we wonder what opportunity that will bring in terms of consciousness. But, you know, I'm sure you're as aware of this as I am.
Yeah.
You know, how should we position ourselves to, you know, for the moment in time, assuming anybody would want to listen to the people like us, and there's so many of us, that they finally want to listen, how should we position ourselves for that, you know, for those moments of awakening?
Well, first of all, I would say with humility and owning the fact that one of those numbers might be us.
Yes.
Okay. So really looking at being willing to look at our own death. And I want to recommend a book that I was turned on to this week, and that's the one I was reading in the park this afternoon in 65 degrees in January, called Things I Learned from Dying.
Great book. Great title.
Anti-death penalty lawyer talks about death on death row and his own father-in-law's death and so on, and really having to look at that. So act as if you're in hospice, number one. And then, you know, you've got a job to do. And if you are fortunate enough to survive, then learn about these emotions and work with these emotions that I'm talking about, fear, anger, grief, despair, and joy, and go deeply into working with them, and also bring joy into your life and create beauty and have fun. And go have a good cry and wail and scream and yell, and then go watch a funny movie or play with your dog or do something really, really sweet.
Well, Rags has been getting super played with lately. You have a dog, too. What's your dog's name?
Sammy.
That's right. I met Sammy. Sammy's
a
big
boy. Yeah, he sure is. He and Rags would have a hoot.
Oh, my God. And Rags and Squishy are getting along great, and I'm kind of using them as barometers. Saying that, you know, when I see them really messed up, you know, I'll give myself permission to lose it, you know. Damn. You know, I'm just amazed. I think you and I met in
2000.
2000. Okay, that's 14 years ago.
Yep.
And if we sit back and look at how many times and ways the world has evolved, this was before 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
This was before Deepwater Horizon. This was before Iraq.
Yep.
This was before 2008. You know, this was before Fukushima. You know, this was, and it has gotten so many orders of magnitude worse in the 14 years that we have known each other.
That's right.
And yet, we and so many others, I mean, you and I are not alone. We're not making this
not at all. No.
Like a club of two. You know, we were so clear. I mean, I go back to Terrence McKenna in the late 90s, that this was where it was going. And I'm still of the opinion that this has to play out, that there's nothing that can stop this or prevent this now.
Right.
So we got 2 minutes left. This is the time when we really need to turn and face it. Now, the question that somebody might ask you, how do we turn and face this?
We turn and face it by dealing with our worst fears, our deepest grief, our most enraging anger, our deepest despair, and in that we find the joy and the transformation of consciousness, and we really discover who we are and why we're here.
And we meet some really good fucking friends along the way. Pardon
me. We sure do. We
sure
do.
But damn it. You know, we have, you know, stuck in the middle with you and a whole bunch of other people that I'm proud and honored to have known and worked with. All right, we're about done here. Carolyn Baker will be back hosting the show for you guys next week while I am off in Albuquerque, where it's going to be a little bit warmer, attending a wonderful UWIPI ceremony 2 weeks from tonight. My guest will be Chris Long, who you all saw. He's my medicine man from the Sweat Lodge at Singing Stone Lodge here in Crestone. He's a wonderful guy and a dear friend. 2 weeks from tonight, he will be my guest, and we will carry some of these issues much further. In the meantime, come back for Carolyn Baker next week. Carolyn, thank you for coming on again.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll see you guys in a few weeks. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, leaving you tonight, and I'll be back with you soon. I love you guys. Good night.